Today's show features 3M defending champion Michael Thomas, who wants to make the FedEx Cup playoffs, but is a little bit back and has to have a good couple of weeks. Then we'll talk with Dr. Bern Bernanke, president of the Golf Heritage Society, and then Jack Nicklaus II. Jackie will talk about his latest book, The Best Seat in the House, and the 18 lessons that he learned from his dad. And he caddied for his dad when his dad won that historic 1986 Masters. First up is 3M Open defending champ Michael Thompson. Michael and I had a chance to talk before he went up to Minnesota for the tournament about his season so far. All right, we're talking with Michael Thompson. And Michael, you had a win this year, and FedEx Cup is coming up. What's your schedule like for the next few weeks?
So I'm playing the 3M Open up in Minnesota, and then definitely playing Wyndham, which is the week before the FedEx Cup starts. Might potentially add in Reno or Truckee, California, which is right before Wyndham, just to give myself another chance if I need to earn enough points to get into the FedEx Cup. So.
Well, you said you were ranked 124, so the possibility of Reno is if you think you need it to get the points because you want to get in the FedEx Cup playoffs.
Correct, yeah. The goal is to play in the FedEx Cup and give myself a chance to make it as far as I can. Haven't had as good a year as I have in the last couple, but I still think I'm in a good spot going into next year, and I'll be able to have a full schedule no matter what. So really, this is just the last month, final push to get in the FedEx Cup.
Yeah, that win really helps as far as giving you a freer idea of your schedule for the next couple of years, but you still want to get into the FedEx Cup because of what's at stake.
Yeah, it's I got to finish in that 125 in order to get into the players next year, guaranteed. And depending on how far I make it into the FedEx Cup, you get into invitationals and majors and that sort of thing. So really, this is kind of crunch time. This is the final hour before the test, and it's time to get after it.
Well, you said a couple minutes ago that you had kind of switched back to the iBlades. You're using the new Ping 425. So obviously you weren't happy with what was going on before.
I was using the Blueprints, which are more of a blade, a traditional blade. The sweet spot is a little bit smaller, and I've been working on my swing quite a bit this year, kind of using this year as a transition for the next few in order to get to a point where I feel like I can put myself in contention more. I just wasn't controlling my distances very well. And so I went back to the iBlade, which is what I played prior to the Blueprints. So the transition was really easy. And I've noticed that my strokes gained into the greens has gotten better over the last month or so. I'm just not converting the putts. So this week I've been doing a lot of practice. I'm putting, short game, chipping, and hopefully that will carry me over the next month to get me into the FedEx Cup.
One thing that's always amazed me about golf, especially with you as pros, is that you're still working on the games, and that some days the irons are great, the driver's great, short game's not so great. You guys struggle with the same things that we do, but you guys know how to fix it better.
Yeah.
Well, you hope.
We hope we do. golf is an ebb and flow. It's very rare that every aspect of the game is feeling good. You feel like you're doing it all well. There's really only one guy who was able to do it really well all the time. That was Tiger Woods. We all know what his practice schedule was like during that time frame. So we make it look easy, but we struggle just as much as everybody else with the game, and we get frustrated and we get burned out, we go through ebbs and flows. So it's I think a big part of it is just keeping the positive mindset, being an eternal optimist, and enjoy the struggle and enjoy the pursuit of perfection.
I know I've talked to Dr. Mo, and he always talks to me that he talks to you guys about having a very short memory and playing shot by shot. And
especially in the pros, you've honestly got to forget real quick what just happened or importantly didn't happen,
right.
And you got to focus on what's ahead of you.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's kind of a cliche. You play one shot at a time and you forget all the bad shots and try to remember all the good shots. So, yeah, it's easier said than done. It takes some serious mental discipline to be able to do that because, you know, I use my time away from the golf course to not only decompress and get away from golf, but also to visualize myself only hitting great shots. So I try not to focus on the bad shots or the bad bounces, bad breaks, because it'll drive you crazy, especially at the pro level where every shot counts.
I've talked to Dr. Mo about emotions, and a lot of you are taught and adhere to not showing a lot of emotions on the golf course. And Mo said 70, 71st, 72nd hole, you can. But prior to that, you can drive yourself nuts by getting so emotional,
right.
Especially on a Thursday. And I know you spent some time with Mo.
Mm-hmm.
Is some things going on internally that you're needed to talk to him about and get straight?
No, not really. But it's for me, I think that's the reason why I love golf so much is because it fits my personality. I'm kind of an even keel, non-emotional guy. At least I try to be. But Mo's 100% right. The first, 70 holes, 69 holes of a golf tournament, each hole is just another hole, right? There's no, you don't have to do anything. There's no real pressure other than the pressure you put on yourself. The last three holes, that's where you look at the leaderboard and see where you are and see if you need to change your game plan or just give it a little bit extra effort, focus, in order to make that putt or hit that shot. And if you pull it off, then you can show the emotion because that's when it gets exciting, right? Because those shots, especially when you're close to the lead, mean a lot. You going back to discipline and mental discipline, it's a difficult mental discipline to be unemotional for the first 69 holes. And as pros, we don't get it right every time. The weeks that we do play well, that part comes easy.
Yeah, and it's not that you're not emotional. You are emotional, but you're holding it inside.
Right, yeah, we're just not showing it, right? We're muttering under our breath if
right.
we miss a shot. If we make a putt, we might give it a little fist pump, but we're not going crazy like we won the golf tournament.
Right.
For two reasons. One, you don't want the adrenaline rush, going through your body or the cortisol rush when you get angry with yourself. But you also don't want to look like a fool in front of your peers, right? You'll get, as a player, you'll get ridiculed in the locker room for that.
Right, right.
It's just professional courtesy to, just go about your business, get your job done, and then towards the end of the tournament, then you can start being a little wild and crazy.
All right, being on the tour as long as you have, what do you think about this Bryson Brooks situation? I know they're trying to get social media points so they can get part of that bonus at the end. Is that what it's all about, or is this thing real?
I think it started out a bit Brooks being a little, fed up with kind of Bryson's antics, but I think they're both playing into it now. I think they're both doing it for financial reasons, so I think you have to look at it with that grain of salt. And with that being said, from my perspective, I just laugh and look at it as entertainment now because there's no hard feelings there. At least there better not be because they're both going to be on the Ryder Cup team. And so they're going to have to be around each other and want to play for each other. It's entertaining. It brings drama to golf, which for a lot of people can be boring. It's kind of what the world feeds off of a little bit. And I think it's platonic enough that it's not going to hurt anybody right now. I think if it gets personal to insults and stuff, then they're crossing the line. So I hope the tour has warned them to be careful with kind of what they say and what they do. But right now, it's just, it's funny.
And the media is just eating it up.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It'd be, the world thrives off of this drama, right? And it's, but when you look into it closely with a fine-tooth comb, it's just two guys trying to build their player impact program profile on social media to make a ton of money at the end of the year. And when you look at it that way, it just becomes an entertainment factor, almost like they're acting.
Yeah. Well, Michael, we wish you nothing but good luck. Good luck next week and the next weeks after and into the FedEx Cup.
Thank you, Rich. Appreciate it.
Michael Thompson, great guy, defending champ at the 3-Up Open, trying to get into the FedEx playoff for this year. Next up is Dr. Bern Bernecke, president of the Golf Heritage Society. But don't forget about CJ's Italian Restaurant. Check out their full menu at cjsitalianrestaurant.com. Check out the monthly specials created by the elementary schools. Even though they're closed for the summer, they still have specials every week, and part of the proceeds goes to those schools. But check out their cheese bread, their breadsticks with marinara, just unbelievable. Fresh salads and deep dish pizza is what they are known for. And if you've ever had pizza from Chicago, you know deep dish is that favorite, and it is down here as well. But their thin crust and cauliflower pizza is also good. Go in and say hello to Graham and Ada at CJ's Italian Restaurant and check out their menu at cjsitalianrestaurant.com.
Hi, everyone. My name is Allison Fillmore. I'm the executive director for the Tour Championship, and you're listening to the best show ever, the Back Nine Boys.
Oh, I paid her a lot of money for that. Our next guest is Dr. Bern Bernecke, president of the Golf Heritage Society. Good morning, Bern, and how are you? Bern?
I'm doing great today. Rich, how are you?
I am doing great. It's good to have you on the show. So tell our listeners who may not be familiar with the Golf Heritage Society what it's all about. Bern, you may need to move to another location. We're not catching you right now. So if you could do that, that'd be great. The Golf Heritage Society actually was founded in 1970. The original name was the Golf Collectors Society, and they've changed the name a couple of times, and now it is known as the Golf Heritage Society. And we will get a hold of Bern in just a minute. We're actually going to be looking up his phone number. It's amazing how technology works, and we will get it done. Right here on the Back Nine Boys Golf Show. PJ is giving him a call now. They've got a national convention coming up in October. You know, sometimes when you do a show live, there are some technical issues. And we're going to call Dr. Bern and get him on the phone. And so we can continue our interview with him. They have a tournament coming up. They play with Hickory Clubs, which is something I've never played with. I know, and you know, that that's how the game started. And I also know that it's very difficult to play with those clubs. We'll ask him about that. But Dr. Bern Bernecke, president of the Golf Heritage Society, is going to be on the phone with us in just a couple of minutes. Coming up a little bit later on the show, we're going to talk with Jack Nicklaus' son, Jack Nicklaus II, who wrote a book, Best Seat in the House, 18 Lessons That I've Learned from My Dad. And I'm excited about talking to Jackie about that book. But right now we want to get on the phone with Dr. Bern Bernecke. Dr. Bern, good morning again, and how are you?
Good morning, Rich, and thanks for having me. We're doing great here in Pittsburgh.
Well, I'm so glad that you are. I wish your teams were doing better, but that's another subject. So tell our listeners about the Golf Heritage Society, who may not be familiar with it.
Well, we just love to have fun around the game of golf. You know, there's a thousand ways to enjoy the game. You can go out there and play, and a lot of us enjoy the history. We love the collectibles. We just appreciate everything about the game of golf, and so do our members.
And how many members do you have, Bern?
Well, we're closing in on 1,000 now. We're inviting all types of folks. We've discovered that women are very interested in collectibles and history. They love the players. They love the LPGA, and we're embracing all of that. So youth groups, women are our largest growing areas.
So as far as collectibles, again, what are you talking about? Are you talking about hickory clubs or just collectibles from anything about golf?
Oh, boy, you name it. Yeah, everything from those older equipment to those recent collectibles of the Masters and the Open and such, those are all collectible. We enjoy all of that. I heard Michael Thompson talking about drama. Drama for us as a collectible is that hunt, the hunt for a first edition book maybe, or something that's going to improve your collection of balls or clubs or print materials. So, yeah, for us it's always about having fun and collecting and improving our collections.
And the society actually started out because of the love for the game of golf.
You bet. A couple of our founders, one was a print collector and in books, and another enjoyed the antique golf clubs and balls, etc. They started to collaborate, and 50 years ago, they organized and began the Golf Collector Society, and we were that for all those 50 years up until 2018 when we changed the name to Golf Heritage Society. Golfheritage.org is our website where you can learn all about us.
Well, in learning all about you, I wanted to talk with you about the national convention that you've got coming up in October. Tell us about that.
Thanks for that invitation. I'm proud and pleased to tell you that we're hosting in Pittsburgh this year. We'll be just east of the city in Monroeville, and we're going to have a several-day event. We have a warm-up golf with what we're calling heritage golf. That's any era, modern, moving back to classics, moving back to Pirotone, moving back to Hickory. All those groups will be represented. We'll play at Totter Ridge, east of Pittsburgh, and this place called La Trobe Country Club, Arnold Palmer's a place of birth and growth. So we'll be doing that. We'll be in the Doubletree in Monroeville for our convention activities, which will include a trade show with, 100 tables of collectibles and golf support things, travel, and equipment of every kind. We're having a very special new thing, an art symposium with seven notable artists around the world of golf. We're having our educational and our meetings and the opportunities for us to interact and exchange. It'll be a great time.
All right, so as far as La Trobe is concerned, you guys are going to go there. Will you have the opportunity for a tour and see the warehouse where Arnie kept every club he ever had?
Well, you know, that's a goal. That is a pending request, we'll call it, and we're hopeful of advancing the legacy of Arnold Palmer and assisting their family and foundation to do exactly that. Our organization is full of passion to do exactly that. In fact, Rich, we're going to have a Zoom call Wednesday night where one of our prominent collectors has a unbelievable Arnold Palmer golf collection.
Oh, wow.
He's going to walk through his collection at home on a live Zoom for our members. We're also going to bring several of his pieces and others to have a Arnold Palmer collectibles display on site in that hotel that I mentioned.
That would be incredible. How do you become a member of the Golf Heritage Society, Bern?
It's really easy. If one goes to our website, golfheritage.org, you can see a little bit about us and join the fun instantly. We've made provisions to allow you to use PayPal or a credit card to jump in right now. And it's $50 a year for receiving our print journal, The Golf, which is really notable in the game of golf. Some folks collect it. Other folks, particularly our younger folks, not as much, but they can be, for $25, a digital member only and not receive the journal. So So we invite people a lot of different ways.
Yeah, you've got a couple of different options. How did you get involved with the group, Vern?
Oh, boy, Rich. Well, I was in an antique store with my lovely wife looking at the ceiling and wondering, what am I doing here? And she said, why don't you look for some golf stuff? And it was a brilliant idea. And 25 years later, I play in golf events with my old stuff, and I have a modest middle-end collection of different things, balls, clubs, books, jewelry, ceramics, a little bit of everything, just like I'm in general practice in medicine.
All right, let me ask you this. How hard is it to play the old hickory clubs?
Oh, it's not hard at all. It's really a lot of fun. Like anything, a good golfer hits it square and the ball goes. It's more about the ball than the club. It's more about the swinger than the club. So, you know, anybody who expects to play better or worse, you know, you're really going to play like you're going to play. So I was in an event last weekend, and the winner with hickory clubs from the White Tees shot a 71 to win. I shot a 78 from the Gold Tees, and I was real happy with it. We all had fun.
So when you play with hickory clubs in these kind of tournaments that you just mentioned, are you playing with an old ball in the same era, or are you playing with some of the newer design balls?
Great questions. It depends on the event and the tournament director.
Okay.
The Society of Hickory Golfers and their U.S. Hickory Open, of which I've played in four times, will allow use of any USGA ball. And the gentleman that I mentioned, Rick Wechner, a fine player, used a modern ball. In the pre-1900 events, notably the National Hickory Championship, it's a replica Gutty ball. And smooth face pre-1900 clubs, and they're inspected. So, you know, there's a lot of ways of having fun with playing these golf tournaments and putting together a set of tools to go out there and bang it around.
Yeah, I heard a story about Jordan Spieth being over across the pond and trying to hit a hickory club, and it took him a few minutes to understand how you had to swing and how hard it was to get used to swinging, but he eventually got it.
You know, you have to understand that shaft is a little different than what you're used to.
A lot.
And a good player understands that fairly immediately, makes the adjustment, and they're on their way.
Yeah. All right, Vern, give us the website again, and they can go up online and find out more about the National Convention or even join if they would like.
I'm delighted to invite people to visit our website, golfheritage.org. If you want, you can download an application and mail it in with a check, or use a credit card and be an instant member to join the Golf Heritage Society. Come on with us.
Oh, great. Dr. Vern, thank you for being with us. Sorry about the technical difficulties, but, you know, it's a live show, so sometimes we have those.
Thanks, Rich. I appreciate it, and no worries. We're all good here.
All right. Thank you. Dr. Vern Bernecke, president of the Golf Heritage Society, enjoying his day, and we want to thank him for being with us. Up next is Jack Nicklaus II to talk about his latest book, Best Seat in the House. We'll be right back on the Back Nine Boys Golf Show.
This is Crunchy Pete. I caddy for the great Keith Mitchell, and you're listening to Back Nine Boys on ESPN Radio Savannah.
We are so glad that you are with us. Jack Nicklaus won the last Masters in 1986, his sixth one, with Jack Nicklaus II on his bag. And Jackie said he had the best seat in the house, and now that is the name of his book. Great book. Our next guest is Jack Nicklaus II. Good morning, Jackie, and thank you so much for being with us.
Rich, thanks so much. Great to talk with you.
I was just thrilled with the book, and I think everybody remembers that 86 Masters. You had, as you said, the best seat in the house. What a great name for the book.
Well, thanks so much. I was only 24 years old at the time, and so many people related to where they were back there in 1986 on that great Sunday where Dad had that great victory. And I did feel like I had the best seat in the house, and then I kind of started thinking it over the years past that and say, you know what, I ought to share some of my thoughts about, kind of watching my father, not just that day, in 86 and what he experienced, but what I experienced watching him in I think, a great life, a great man.
What was it like to caddy for him at the Masters? You're there on Sunday. You're getting ready for, you really don't know what's going to happen by the end of the day, but it was a pretty spectacular day for you and your dad.
Well, it was. You know, he played well all week. Didn't make any putts early on in the tournament, and made a few more putts on Saturday, and it kind of the floodgates opened up that Sunday. Excuse me. He's won a lot of golf tournaments, as you know, but that particular Sunday, he's 46 years old at the time. He's certainly past his prime, and it was the emotions that I remember probably more than anything, Rich. You know, as he approached each screen, that back nine, the applause that he got, it was phenomenal. And I knew it was more than just what he was doing that day.
Right.
I believed it was an appreciation for, you know, his career and even beyond the golf, kind of what he stood for throughout his career. And then, of course, I had an amazingly special moment that I'll cherish forever, the embrace that I shared with Dad on the 18th green. He made me part of it. He truly did, and that meant the world, will always mean the world to me.
What was it like walking up the 18th green, knowing that that sixth Masters win was there, and the crowd, I'm sure, was just unbelievably excited and loud?
Well, there's no way that I thought that he had the Masters at that point in time. You still had Tom Kite, Greg Norman, Seve Ballesteros were hot on his heels, and I knew that he did everything that he could do that day to give himself the best chance to win. He still had, as he approached 18, he still had about a 40 or 50 foot putt up the hill. And, I look at the replays, I thought that he had left it about 5 feet short, and I'm trying to help him line up that putt. And as I said all week, trying to remind him to keep his head still and line it up. And I look at the films, it was only about a 2-inch putt. And but he says, Jackie, I can handle this one. Anyway, it was so special. And then, of course, he finished up. He gave me an amazing embrace and made me a part of the whole thing.
Yeah.
And then we walked from the 18th green over to the Jones cabin. And honestly, it's the only time I saw Dad all day nervous. Hmm. And I kind of looked at him, and all of a sudden I realized that he couldn't control what was going to happen in the tournament anymore.
Right.
It was beyond his reach. He did everything that he could do. And, of course, we watched the last couple of groups finish up from the monitor inside the Jones cabin. And it was with my grandma and my aunt, my mom, and my dad. And, he ended up winning the tournament. And celebration began. We started hugging, and Dad stepped out of the Jonesville with a great celebration. It was fun.
Pretty cool. What did you guys talk about on Sunday, in between holes, in between shots, or did you talk?
Well, I had caddied for Dad quite a lot, and I kind of used some of my experience. I go back to the 1982 U.S. Open. I'm caddying for Dad out at Pebble Beach, where Tom Watson made that incredible chip in on the 71st. Dad thought he had won that event. I think when he finished up 18, and I kind of backtracked when he started that final day. And forgive me for talking too long on this, but when we started that final day in 82, he bogeyed the first hole, and the second hole at the time was a par five, which he parred. So basically he gave two shots to the field.
Right.
And then he birdied the third, fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh hole. So he birdied these five holes in a row. The walk from 7 green to 18 is about 12 feet. And I remember pumping both fists, looking at him in the face and saying, way to go, Dad. This is great. And, I probably had nothing to do with it, but Dad hit his drive down the middle of the fairway, and his shot came up a little short at 8 green into the frog here that was in between the sand and the regular rough, and he did not get up and down. He bogeys 8, and I kind of blamed myself for maybe taking him out of his mode. So
gotcha.
Fast forward to 86, there was no way I was going to show any emotion. I just, he'd make a great putt, and I'd like, nice putt, Dad. Let's make another one. And it was all business. I think I realized that as a caddy, I probably wasn't going to help that a whole lot because, you know, he's won a lot of majors and I haven't won any. But I knew I could hurt that.
Yeah.
So I was his friend. I kept up, you know, the business that I could manage.
Sure.
Best I could. And I was there to help him.
So how long, Jackie, did it take you to write the book, put all your thoughts together? The name of the book obviously came up and you had that. But how long did it take you and how much did John Maxwell help you?
John Maxwell actually was at my parents' house doing a fundraiser in conjunction with his group as well as the Nicholas Children's Healthcare Foundation with my mom and dad. And I had mentioned to John that I'd been thinking about doing this book for about 5 years, and he goes, I've got the person, exactly the person that you need to write this book with. And that evening, we picked up the phone. I called Don Yeager in Tallahassee, and Don and I hit it off immediately. And I've been writing down notes for years, going back, you know, really prior to the 86 Masters. Anyway, from the time John introduced me to Don Yeager, it was about a year later that the book came out. It took us a solid 10 months to do this book. And actually, Don ended up getting corona very severely right in the middle of it. So he had about a two-month window where he was fairly idle. But the rest of the time, we were full on. And I think we had a great collaboration. We had a great time, and I'm really proud of the book.
All right. You mentioned lessons from your dad that you've learned. Of those 18 lessons, what is the most important lesson that you observed by watching your dad on the golf course?
Well, specific to watching him on the golf course, which I think parallels life in so many ways.
Yeah.
Dad always felt like, you know, he could only manage what he could manage, meaning he prepared himself so well. And he worked his butt off before he ever got to the golf course. And one conversation I remember him sharing with actually Ken Leister, John Miller's manager. I was in the back seat, and I love Johnny. And Johnny, you know, uses the choke word a lot. And Ken asked my dad, he says, Jack, why is it you never seem to choke? And my dad says, well, I'm not afraid to win. Huh. And I quickly, back seat, chimed in. I said, Dad, don't you mean you're not afraid to lose? He goes, no. He says, it's easy to lose. He says, anybody can lose. He said, but to win, he says, win takes a great responsibility because people are going to expect more of you when you win.
Right.
And separating yourself from the field of victory, so it's a lot tougher to win. He managed what he could control. He seemed not to get nervous during competition because I know he believed that he was prepared. All of his work went in for that moment in competition, where it was time to perform a golf shot. And, Dad is all about winning. He is so competitive.
Yeah.
Your previous show, I heard you guys talking about Arnold, and, you know, I see Arnold was mentioned, of course, my dad in the same light. You know, you're either the king or you're not. And, Arnold
Great
was
point.
The king
yeah.
in his era. My
yeah.
dad was the king in his era.
Yeah.
Tiger King in his era. You know, you're going to win or you're not. And that's, I've learned a lot just watching my dad and how he rises to the occasion. He loves to win.
Yeah. Well, one of the stories I loved, Jackie, was when you had a bad day. You had a bad day on the course, and there was a phone call from your dad, and your dad asked you to ask him after you went through how bad of a day you had. And then he said, ask me about my day. Tell us that.
Well, that's a great lesson on being a parent is, you know, keeping your kids your number one priority. And that was, a great example of that. I'm 18 years old at the time. I just accepted to play at the University of North Carolina. And like any teenager, it was all about me. I couldn't see past my own nose. And so my dad calls me. It was 1980. And I'm like, you know, a little annoyed. I'm signing my scorecard. Oh my gosh, just before cell phones. And my dad's on the phone, and he says, "How'd you do today, Jackie?" I must have gone over 20 minutes about how I hooked it or spliced it or whatever the heck I did. Not so great, which that tournament means nothing to me today. And at the end of the conversation, I'm about ready to hang up, and my dad says, "Well, do you want to ask how your dad did today?" And I'm like, absolutely embarrassed. And said, "Oh, my gosh, yes, how did you do today?" And he said, "Well, I just won the U.S. Open." But slightly more significant than what I was doing.
Yeah, how tall did that make you feel after he said that?
Rich, I felt very small at that point.
Understandably so, yeah. I just happened to win the U.S. Open. Yeah, I got it. Your dad was there, and you talk about being there, being present, being active with your kids. But your dad was there, even though he was on the road a lot. How did that make you feel, or how great was that just to know that he was there? Maybe not in person, but mentally and phone calls or whatever, he was there.
Well, obviously, playing golf around the world, Dad did not have the typical 9-to-5 job. And I'm going to tell you, Mom and Dad were at our events more than the typical parent that was working in town, maybe right across the street. They always made a point to, again, I mentioned earlier, keep us a priority in their lives. And I think being present for your children, and really present, like listening, means so much to your kids. I've done the same thing with my kids. And actually, as I've become a parent, over the years, I've learned what a commitment my mom and dad made.
Yeah.
I've realized how hard that is to be there as much as you can. And Dad, I'll never forget, we were playing in the middle of the state of Florida, a football match, my brother and I, my brother Steve, and Dad's playing in Akron, Ohio at the World Series of Golf. And he finished his Friday round, got on a plane, flew down to Florida, drove an hour to get out to this obscure town in the middle of Florida, watched our high school football game that Friday night. It was our crosstown rival. We won, which doesn't mean anything, but I remember that we won. But more importantly, Dad and Mom were there. He slapped us on the butts. Nice going today. So I got to go get back and finish a golf tournament. And I'd like to tell you that he won that weekend up in Akron, Ohio. But again, what we remember is Mom and Dad were there. They were present.
Yeah. That's very important. Love to talk about that and more. Jackie, we got to take a quick break. We'll be back with Jack Nicklaus II and his book, Best Seat in the House, right after this on the Back Nine Boys Golf Show. Stay with us.
Hey, everybody. This is John Bell from Widespread Panic, and you are rocking with the Back Nine Boys Golf Show.
And welcome back. I'm Rich Stiles, and we're on the phone and talking with Jack Nicklaus II, otherwise known as Jackie, about his book, Best Seat in the House. How proud of the book are you, Jackie, that it's out, it's doing well? You've got to be thrilled and proud how it's been accepted.
You know what? We've had a great response to the book. I will say that I never thought about selling a bunch of books. It was I set out to really pay tribute to my mom and dad. And honestly, my dad, my mom as much as my dad in the tribute. And when I handed the book to my mom and dad, obviously while they're still here with us, the joy that I had in that moment was off the charts. And when my father read the book, when my mom read the book, what I got from them is, son, I'm proud of you. And I couldn't have asked for anything more.
I mean, that is what a son likes to hear from either of his parents, but to hear it from both. I mean, that just had to be an incredible feeling for you.
It was. And that's, whether I ever sold a single book or not, that for me was it.
Yep. All right. Do you think that your dad is the best golfer of all time?
Yes. I think he is. But you know what? Everybody has their errors.
Sure.
And I think it'd be so interesting to, put the top golfers from the eras across time and see how they would compete. And I've heard Dad ask that same question. His response would be that, Byron Nelson would probably figure out how to win today. Tiger Woods would probably figure out how to win back in the 30s. You know, just you go across the board, and
sure.
I think about the love of competition and the want to win. And they figured out whatever instruments they were using, whether the golf balls are today or yesterday, and they love to win and they love to compete. It would be so much fun to see them all play.
Oh yeah, oh yeah, it would be. So if you could put a bonus lesson that you've learned in your book as an extra chapter, what would that lesson be?
Oh gosh. Well, Don really, he cut me off at 18 because I could still be writing.
You could have done a 19th hole.
You know what? My bonus lesson was frankly the last chapter in the book, and it's called Full Circle. And during the process, Don asked me, says, "Well, tell me about the relationship that you share with your own children." And I have five children, and I started. Quickly answering it, and my response stopped immediately. I said, you know what? I need to sit back and think about this. And that evening, I reached out to each of my five kids. I said, guys, what do you think the relationship that we shared? Please give me a little description rather than having your dad throw something at you.
Right.
And I'm going to tell you, that question I asked my kids, the responses I got, for me, were absolutely incredible. And that chapter is named Full Circle. And I'm telling you that all the efforts came full circle to me in that chapter. Like, yes, all the times that I spent watching my kids, the time I put in, trying to show my kids a good foundation and teach them about competition and just about life, really, they paid attention. And a lot of times you don't think your kids are listening. And the response I got from my kids, showed me that, they had listened.
That's awesome.
That made me very proud.
That's awesome. Yeah, it should be. Do any of them play golf?
They do, but it was funny. They wanted to stay away from golf for some reason as younger. They always play the team sports, and I can understand that. Playing golf as a Nicklaus, there's a lot of, predisposed thoughts on how you should walk and how you should play. And I lived that with all my playing days, trying to compete. But now they're starting to play. Now they've gotten all but one is out of college. And I'm here in Charleston right now, visiting my son, Will. He's playing lacrosse in North Carolina, but he's here for an internship this summer. And they're getting out of college, they're playing the individual sports, and they're picking up golf now. I wished they had paid a little bit more attention to it when they were younger, because golf is easier to learn, I think, when you're younger. But they like the game now. They're enjoying it with their friends, so it's fun to watch. But some are actually pretty good. But you're not going to see, I think, any of my five children on the tour.
All right, we've got about 45 seconds left. Do you still follow the Tar Heels, basketball, football, as much as you did when you were in school?
Well, of course. As I mentioned with my son there, I love the Tar Heels. I'm always going to be blue sky blue. But, no, it's fun. I love sports. I love all kinds of sports. I think I got that from my father. And you mentioned basketball. Dean Smith was really nice to me, as was Roy Williams.
Yeah.
It's fun going back to school, watching my son run around on the field. I see it as four bonus years when your kid gets to
That's
play
awesome,
college.
Especially where they go where you went. Jackie, thank you for being with us. Pleasure to have you, and great book. Congratulations on that.
Rich, thanks so much, and good luck with the Back 9 Boys Golf Show. I really appreciate it.
I appreciate it.